and a very warm welcome to the latest episode of the Total Saints podcast. My name is Martin Stark, and once again, I'm joined by our panel to discuss all things Southampton Football Club. As every week now, we're streaming this episode of TSP live on our Facebook and our Twitter pages. It's also on our YouTube channel. Now, if you're watching live on Facebook or YouTube this evening, you can get involved with the conversation using the comments section. Coming up this week on the podcast, reaction to the defeat at Wolves. We'll look back at a great win in front of the new owners last week, and then we'll preview a huge weekend with Manchester City visiting St Mary's on Saturday. First of all, let me introduce you to our regular TSP guests. Steve Grant is owner of Saints Web, which is the independent Southampton FC website. How's your week been, Steve? You all good?
Yeah, not too bad. It's been nice and warm as usual, but good to get out on Tuesday for the Brentford game. That was kind of, I think we kind of expected to win, but I think it was a pleasant surprise, the sort of manner of it all, wasn't it? It was all very comfortable for the most part, yeah. I think.
We're not used to that, are we?
No. I mean, going, 25 minutes, half an hour with a three-goal lead at the end of the game, and you're thinking, well, I mean, this is done, isn't it?
It's a while since we've been shouting, ole, ole. With 15 minutes to go. Glenn is also with us. Glenn's the writer of the blog League One Minus 10. How's your week been, Glenn? All good?
Yep, it's been okay. Everyone's recovered from COVID. Who had it? So we had to sort of segregate our house for a bit. One of my daughters had it. But it didn't stop me getting out. I played indoor cricket on Monday and we won. So we're officially better than the England team. we've won one game this season anyway.
All right.
Brentford game on Tuesday night, which broke up the week nicely.
And, yeah, absolutely.
Yep, here we are.
Good. And Dan Sheldon is the Athletic's dedicated Saints reporter. Busy week for you last week. It's been a bit quieter this week, Dan, if you managed to catch your breath.
To a certain extent, yeah. But there's been a lot of other stuff that I've been working on, kind of chipping in elsewhere. So just as busy, plus with the game in the middle of the week and then Wolves yesterday, as busy as ever, really. It hasn't really settled down too much yet.
Good. Well, the biggest hello and thank you is reserved to our patrons, wherever you might be listening or watching this week. Welcome to episode 183 of the Total Saints podcast.
This is the Total Saints podcast with Martin Stark, Steve Grant, Glenn Delacour, and The Athletic's Dan Sheldon.
Now, first this week, an impressive Christmas and New Year run came to an end with defeat at Molineux. So let's get into that. Was that a fair result or did we deserve to get something from that game, Steve?
It's a frustrating one in that, it's kind of raised it when we did our predictions last week that Wolves are largely eye-bleedingly terrible to watch. And for the most of that game, that was the case. You got Moutinho and Jimenez rolling around when someone dares to breathe on them. At various moments, and the game was really stop-start. But I thought for the most part we were comfortably in the game. Certainly, first half, give away a silly penalty. It was one of those ones where I think if the ref had given it initially, I don't think anybody would have any particular arguments with it. But having not given it, and then it's gone to VAR, it's like, well, is that really a clear and obvious mistake? The fact that they looked at it about 47 different times, pretty much all from the same angle as well, which I don't think helped. I'm not convinced that was really one that you necessarily need to overturn. And then, of course, we then get the inconsistency of not getting the decision our way in the second half when Romeo's clearly kicked in the penalty area after he's knocked the ball away. It was kind of frustrating, but we didn't help ourselves. Silly defensive errors. I think it was Teller gave the ball away, didn't he? About 30 yards from goal in the build-up to the penalty decision. Bednarek dives in on Eight Nori when he doesn't really need to. All he's got to do is just put a blocker in there rather than desperately try and lunge at the ball. I mean, the second one, what can you really say about Fraser Forster's positioning? I mean,
we will get onto that in quite a lot of detail, I'm sure.
It's just extraordinary. Yeah. That one's just absolute chaos. And then the third one, I think, is largely because Lianco's down injured. And all of a sudden, Traore's got 30 yards of space to run into. But it is immensely infuriating that we've allowed Connor Cody, no Premier League goals in, 4 years? And Adama Traore, no assists, no goals in about 18 months to both score against us. I mean, that is kind of peak Saints, isn't it, really?
Yeah, absolutely. Glenn, Ralph said afterwards that the game wasn't really the moment for Kyle Walker-Peters to start. Were you surprised to see an unchanged starting lineup, certainly after the games that we'd had in the previous week?
Yes, because I felt that with Brentford, the formation was okay. And in the second half, we played very well. But I thought the first half, we looked quite disjointed. And it just looked odd. And I think we won that game as much because Brentford were terrible. So I was surprised that he stuck with it. I don't know how fit Kyle Walker-Peters was. I would like to think that if he was fit to play, that he would have started. I'm not blaming Nathan Teller. Maybe I'm just, you know, old-fashioned. I don't like this formation. I don't like this, you know, playing Perreault basically as a left winger, because when it comes down to defending, you know that Nathan Teller is going to get found wanting a little bit. Now, you could argue that it was his man that scored against Brentford. And as Steve said earlier, he kind of gave the ball away in the defensive third, which led to the, you know, the penalty being given against us. But yeah, I was surprised that he picked the same team. But, you know, but having done that, I largely agree with what Steve said about the game and how it panned out. We were okay, but we chucked them goals at bad times. And with a team like Wolves, who are good at managing the game, but the way they do it is horrible. With all the throwing themselves around, and you know, going back to the penalty incident, I struggle with the way it panned out, because we didn't even get a review really of our shout. And the reason for that is because they got a load of players around the referee and all the pushing and shoving starting. So you can imagine the guys at Stockley Park going, "Oh, there must be something we need to look at here. Let's have a look at this." Whereas Romeo, too honest for his own good, gets up, gets on with the game. No Saints players get round the referee. And I just wonder if, again, we've been victims of being too nice.
Dan, you're so often the voice of reason when it comes to referees and VAR. What did you make of the one that went against us and the one that they didn't look at that maybe they should have done?
I thought, in watching it live, I thought it was a penalty. Is that you're quite far away at Wolves from the goal, and it just looked, all I could see was Bednarek just lunging in. And I mean, Bednarek's got that in his locker. He's probably the clumsiest Southampton defender. He's most kind of mistake prone. Although I think Lianko will give him a run for his money and time. Saw the replay. I thought it was a penalty still. It looked like he got the ball, but I actually think he kicked the floor, which then kind of made it look like it was just a really, I mean, Steve said they showed the replay so many times, but I came away and thought penalty. And then, as the others have said, the Romeo one, if you give the Bednarek one, you have to give the Romeo one, because it's, you know, there's contact in the box. It doesn't matter where the kind of ball was. Wolves weren't going to score from that chance that Bednarek took him down. Saints, Romeo wasn't going to score, but that's kind of, for me, that was irrelevant. But as the referee on the whole, I actually thought he had a really good game. And the Wolves fans were on his back nonstop. But I generally thought he was very good, let the game go. And there was another point I was going to make, actually, that Glenn was talking about Saints being too nice. And that's a point that Ralph kind of made, but he made it in a strange way, because he complained about Wolves and their kind of play acting. And then at the end, when Lianko gets a knock, Lianko's kind of just there waving in the it was quite funny to watch, just waving in the referee's face as if to say, and then Ralph's like, in that situation you have to go down and just roll on the floor. And I mean, Ralph was quite strong on saying, you know, it puts him off English football when he sees the play acting side of it, but then he wanted his player to do it. So you kind of think you have to, you have to be a bit more streetwise, and Southampton have shown themselves to be a bit more streetwise with some of the stuff they're doing. But I agree with Ralph, and that if Lianko feels as though he's, you know, taken a knock, he has just to go down, roll down, yeah, hold your head, whatever. But then I also think the other defenders, they thought they played Traore offside, then just stopped. So they just stopped. They thought, oh, he's offside, but he wasn't. And they let him have that clear run on goal. So all three goals in isolation were quite disappointing from my point of view.
Is that the problem, Steve? We need to be a bit more dirty, do you think? Do we get that penalty if we're all in their place like Wolves were in the first half?
I wouldn't say dirty, because we've had, what, 12 red cards under Ralph, haven't we?
Streetwise, that's a good word, isn't
so
it?
We're certainly not struggling in the discipline side of things. But yeah, I think you've got to just be a little bit smarter, haven't you, in certain aspects of the game. I mean, I don't think anybody wants us to be constantly in the referee's face, but in certain games you know that referees will be swayed by certain players or certain types of players. So historically we've always had issues when we've come up against Martin Noble, for example, been a prime sort of instigator of basically chatting to the referee all through the game, constantly getting little tiny little 50-50 decisions in his favour. Kevin Nolan previously was a fine exhibitor of that as well. And it's those sort of players, and Connor Cody is obviously a talker for Wolves, and he organises that back line for them superbly well. But because he's obviously a sort of widely respected player as well, and that goes sort of among opposition players and referees, that means that he kind of has a little bit more leeway to get in the referee's face. And he was constantly chatting with the referee. Or whenever the camera panned in, you could see that he was shouting at the ref. There was no real sort of shouting at teammates going on, because they've practiced all week. They know where they've got to be. And yeah, we've got to be a little bit smarter with that. I think whether it's Prowsey, whether it's Romeo, one of those two has got to be kind of picking up that baton and running with it a little bit on our side of things.
Jack Stevens is the best at it.
He is.
From a Southampton point of view. Because at Swansea, when he was in the team, and obviously there were no fans again. And it reminded me of what it was like a little while ago in an empty stadiums, and just how loud and vocal Jack Stevens is at the referee, non-stop. After like 2 minutes at Swansea, he was on the referee's back for a foul. And it just goes on and on and on. But he was the only one that did it.
And obviously he's not guaranteed a place in the side.
No.
This is true. It kind of highlights the small margins though, Glenn. We had more possession, more shots on target, more corners, just back to the old lapse in concentration, Fraser Forster coming for a cross that he had absolutely no chance of getting. It was disappointing to watch the three goals.
Yeah, horrible. Yeah, well, it all comes down to what you do in the two penalty areas at the end of the day. You know, having possession in the middle third, you know, it's all well and good. And I was very frustrated, even though we had quite a few chances, the amount of times we gave the ball away, sort of like as we got to the final third, there was a few disappointing performances out there. Brozier was quiet. Redmond, I thought, was poor. Yeah, and they're the sort of the two furthest forward, if you like. And that to me, and this is what I mean about us being sort of disjointed. I felt like sometimes Diallo picked up the ball and he didn't really know what to do. You know, there was a struggle there, and we got sucked into playing the way Wolves wanted us to play. And you know, they don't want possession particularly. They want to sit tight until you make a mistake or until you overcommit, and then they'll hit you on the break. And we kind of played into their hands. We didn't stay patient really. And you know, and we threw in the first two goals, which just made it very, very difficult. But yeah, it was a difficult afternoon. On another day, we could have got something out of it, and we very nearly did with Perot's header that hit the post, but you know, not to be. And to me, the third goal, yes, okay, we've contributed to our own downfall again, but it, at the end of the day, it didn't really matter in the scheme of things.
Yeah, is that the problem, the missing piece at the moment, Steve? Do we need to find a way of playing better and getting results against those kind of teams? Because you know, on paper, and actually, it was two decent teams, and it was a good game of football. But we need to find a way of taking those chances and cutting out the errors.
No, I actually think kind of almost the opposite. I think we need to find a way of getting results when we play badly, because actually that hasn't happened that very often this season. And while I think first half we were largely on top. I mean, we created half chances more than anything, other than I think Salisu obviously had that header, which he put straight at the keeper. I mean, literally half a yard either side and he scores. It's probably not a difficult header that as well.
No.
I don't think.
Should have scored.
And Teller's one where he put it over the bar about a minute later. I mean, Brozier was flagged offside, but I wonder whether, not wholly convinced that VAR wouldn't have overturned that, because Brozier didn't make contact, didn't really try for it either. It was well over his head. But second half, we had a lot of the ball and did nothing with it really up until the last sort of 10-15 minutes, where we started sort of really having a go, got the goal back, should have then got an equaliser really. But it was, I mean, I would say that was probably one of our, I mean, both games against Wolves have been probably among our poorest performances of the season, which, given that we could and probably should have got results out of both of them, says we're probably still not in too bad a place.
Mm. Let's talk about that James Ward-Prowse free kick then. Dan, was it as good in real life as it was on the telly?
Oh, it was ridiculous. It was just utterly ridiculous. And when he was, because it was a long way out, and I thought, oh, he'd put this one into the box, cross it. And then none of the Saints players were kind of lining up, and you could see from his angle that he wasn't crossing that ball. And it was just ridiculous. Like, you took a moment, like, did that go in? Like, did that actually go in? Did it? Because Sarr had been really good all game, and you just thought, wow. And then you just, the replay from behind, where you think, oh, it's so far out, the keeper should save it. But the movement, it was just, it wasn't his normal technique either, because he normally kind of like gets his foot around it and like whips it. Whereas this was kind of more like a Ronaldo sort of knuckleball type thing, where he just put his foot through it. And the movement on the ball was just, yeah. I mean, I asked Ralph afterwards if it was more done out of frustration than anything. And he said, no, he's been practicing that technique in the week. So
wow,
it's just, yeah, I you know, I think Ralph was asked if he was the best free kick taker in the world. I mean, I don't know world football enough to say that, but I, whenever he stands over the ball, you just think it's going in. And I don't think there's another Premier League player that kind of comes close to that in terms of that skill, the technique, the ability that you just think nine times out of 10, if Southampton have got a free kick in that position, I always think they're going to score. And there's Kevin De Bruyne at Man City maybe, but I think Prowse is a level up in terms of set pieces from him as well. So it was just remarkable.
Ronaldo's always hyped, isn't he, when they get a free kick around there. And then he always either pings it into the wall or into the back of the stand.
Ronaldo's is a show, though, isn't it? Ronaldo's is the kind of the big, the breathing in, you know, the letting it show. It's all just, and then it hits the wall. But Prowse is just, it's just pure. It was one of the best free kicks I've seen in person, without
a
doubt.
It was a real shame yesterday that it wasn't the winner, because the way he buried the ball, and then just because he's such that professional, it was right, jog back to the halfway line.
No golf swing either.
Let's crack on because, we need to try and get something out of this. So, I mean, what did you make of that?
Just one more thing on that. Yeah, what is so good about it is because he hit it with a different technique. Goalkeepers always knew roughly, I mean, I always knew where he was going to put it. You know, every free kick, as Dan said, he hits with the same technique. It's whipped over the wall. It's to the sort of top left corner as he looks at it. And the fact that he's now hit one the other way, that's going to get goalkeepers thinking about what am I doing here?
Yeah, Sarr took a big step to his right.
Yeah.
And that was what screwed him, basically. He had no chance of getting back to it.
But did you see the one, I don't know if you'd have seen it on Match of the Day or if you found a stream, where Prowse was further out than he was for the one he scored from. He was kind of to the left a bit. And he did set up to cross it, and Sarr was in like position that you would kind of. Yeah, well, and he went to try and put it in the corner, didn't he? I thought that was cheap. That would have gone in, I think, as well, had that been on target. Because
I think I remember, was it Brentford when they lost to Fulham in the playoff final a couple of years ago? Fulham player scored from a very similar situation, caught the Brentford keeper out completely. I guess you look at the position of the keeper. If he's setting himself up and you're in that wide position, but not like right on the touchline, but in a sort of within the width of the 18-yard box, and you see the keeper has kind of set himself in that he's fully expecting this ball to be delivered into the box, so he's getting himself ready to come and take the cross. So he's left a huge gap at the near post. If you've got both the accuracy and the power to be able to put it in that near post from 40 yards away, absolutely go for it. Hmm. I mean, it didn't come off. He was put it what, about a yard or two wide, but Sarr wouldn't have been positioning himself that far out again.
No, it, even thinking about that free kick now was just ridiculous. It was such a good, it was one of them things that I watch so much like football, and you're in, when everyone's like, oh, you must have a team, and I don't. And it's the moments that I enjoy. And that is one of the moments that just sticks with you, because it was just pure class and pure skill that it was. Yeah, it was just so good to kind of see live. It reminded me of the Ronaldo one in like 2008, 2009. He scored against David James at Old Trafford, where he hit over the wall and it just bent away from James. I remember watching it on Sky Sports, and it was just so good to be there for that goal. And I think he'll catch Beckham's record as well. I think he'll do that quite comfortably.
Fairly comfortably at the current rate.
I think so, yeah.
Well, the good news is that James Ward-Prowse territory is getting bigger. You know, it was like in and around the 18-yard line, wasn't it? And now we're looking at maybe 25, 30 yards out. And who knows? So, shame that we didn't get anything out of it, because I think it deserved more than it got. The other game this week was Brentford. The floodgates finally opened, Steve. We've been talking about that for a while. So it would have been a late night for you, I guess. But
the minute he stopped saying it's going to happen, it happened.
Did you enjoy that one?
Yeah, that was excellent. I mean, I think we were... It was weird that the first half, we were well on top without really creating a huge amount. I mean, got the early goal, obviously, from the corner. I mean, Brentford's defending throughout was just, I mean, you kind of look back at all four goals and you just think, what the hell are they doing? Basically, for all of them, there is something terrible going on from their perspective. But I mean, the first one is literally just a ball into a good area. And Saints players are the only ones actually attacking the ball. All the Brentford, I think six or seven of them in that 6-yard box were all static. And that was basically why that went in. I mean, the rest of the first half, I think Brentford had a 5-minute spell around when they scored, which, I mean, let's credit the finish on that. The technique for that volley was absolutely ridiculous as well. But other than they then had the same player had a shot about a minute later, didn't he, which forced a palmed away. While the game was still live, those were basically the only chances they created. And we held them at arm's length. And I mean, I found it baffling that they played such a high line in that second half, which just gave us the opportunity just to ping balls either over the top or thread balls through the middle. And we scored from one of each of those, which is good. Probably should have had two or three more. And but I guess, I mean, last 15, 20 minutes, we took our foot off the gas, conserving energy for the weekend, which is understandable. Mm. Gave them what I think they had three really good chances in the space of about a minute, which kind of all got a little bit frantic. But again, other than that, that was kind of the sort of limit that they had, really. And I think Brentford, I think they can, if their away performances are going to be like that on a consistent basis, then relying on their home form to keep them up is a dangerous game to be playing, I think.
Mm. Well, all the talk before the game was who was going to come in at right back. And we ended up with a midfield three in the end, Glenn, which I don't think any of us saw come in. It was Diallo, Romeo and James Ward-Prowse. Really good effort, I thought, having played 2 hours against Swansea at the weekend. But yeah, what did you make of that initial starting lineup and the team sheet? Because that was a surprise for us anyway.
Well, I think when you saw the 11 names, you expected Ward-Prowse to be at right back or right wing back. And of course, you know, wasn't. So, yeah, Nathan Teller was over there. So I'd say limited success. I mean, it was better to have Ward-Prowse in the middle of the team, of course, because he's playing really well at the moment. And I felt like, you know, it went okay. We got away with it. We played really well second half. But the first half, say there was Perreault and Diallo on the left, didn't really seem to know where they should be. But we were, you know, we've been crying out for us to be clinical. We were clinical that game. You know, we scored goals from, I think it was 5 shots on target, 4 goals. Now, if you are clinical, it covers a multitude of sins. And I wouldn't say, you know, we were talking about, Steve was talking about earlier about, you know, playing badly and winning. I'm not going to say we played badly, but I could argue that we didn't play, you know, winning 4-1 well. It was okay, but we, you know, we scored goals when we had the chances. And the most impressive thing to me was Brozier's goal. Because once he got the ball, you knew that A, they weren't going to catch him, and B, there was a 90% chance he was going to score. And it's not often I feel that confident when one of our strikers is going through on goal. So to me, that was the highlight of the game for me. Going back to the original question about formations, I feel like we could have probably put any formation out there against Brentford, and we probably would have won.
Fair enough. Dan, fairy tale start in front of the new owners too.
It was a statement win, wasn't it?
It looked like they enjoyed themselves.
Yeah, 2/3 of the ownership there. I think Dragon particularly enjoyed himself when he got past the scarf. I saw it because in the press box, you've got like kind of little monitors where you can see replays, and it's just basically the feed of the game. And then and he's kind of waving the scarf, and I thought, oh no, that's just cardinal sin for any new owner to do, isn't it? It's like wave the club scarf. You've seen Mike Ashley do it. You've seen them all do it, and you just think, please don't do it. But when you kind of found out where he got it from, it's quite a nice little story to it. So, yeah, I mean, if they're going to pick a game, they pick the right one to turn up to. We'll see whether they're all smiling on Saturday. But
and is it right he gave his tie away? I think you wrote
yeah,
that.
Yeah, he did, yeah. So the fan that gave him the scarf at the end, he gave the scarf back and gave him his kind of club tie as a thank you. And then went he would have been upstairs anyway, but then Ralph joined them upstairs for a chat after he'd spoken to the media.
Yeah, I'm sure he can afford his own scarf.
Do you know, I did think, why don't they just give him a scarf?
You don't want to be the club that hands out a scarf to the new owner and say, just hold this, you know, fans will love you for it. Much better that he got given the scarf, I think.
Do you remember Rupert Lowe with his training kit and the and the initials on it. That was a fabulous moment. That was so wearing a scarf is nowhere near that.
And the Let's Go Wild t-shirts as well. Oh, remember them,
man? Oh, Lord. They'd have been impressed with what they saw, though, Steve, wouldn't they? On Tuesday night.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, you can't really go much better than a comfortable three goal win on your sort of home debut, if you like. I mean, as long as he kind of accepts that it's not going to be like that every week, because it absolutely won't be. No. then hopefully we'll be all right. But yeah, good start.
All right, let's get on to Saturday then. We can't put it off any longer. The last time we played Man City, we came close to causing an upset. Any chance of an upset on Saturday, Glenn, do you think?
Any chance of an upset? On the face of it, no. But why not? They got to lose at some point. I mean, what are they, 13 points clear at the top of the league now? And they've I don't know how many games they've won in a row. I stopped paying attention, to be
about
honest.
12, wasn't it? Or has it gone
So we go out there, zero expectations as supporters, but I'm sure Ralph's not thinking about it like that. They struggled against us last time up at the Etihad. You know, we went with the 4-2-2-2 formation. They didn't seem to be able to deal with it. We were all over them from the first minute. And with a different referee other than John Moss, we could possibly have won it, because we had Carl Walker's 100% 100 mile an hour body check against Adam Armstrong that was overturned. Remember, we also, you know, we had a VAR decision go for us in the 93rd minute or wherever it was. Mm. So from that point of view, we'll go into it thinking, well, we did okay against these last time, so why not? But we have started to let in bad goals, and you can't do that if you want to get any sort of result against Manchester City. So I always think these games are 10 minutes at a time. You try and get through the first 10 minutes, you try and get through the next 10 minutes. And if you're still in the game in the second half, then, you know, then hopefully you can nick something. But I mean, you can't predict which 11 50 million pound players they're going to stick out on the pitch. You've just got to pick what you think is the correct formation, correct personnel to go about a game where you're obviously not going to have much of the ball. So it's got to be players that are disciplined, and you've just got to see how it goes. But having any expectations of getting anything out of it, I think, is a very dangerous game to play, and you will ultimately probably be disappointed.
And Steve, it's probably fair to say that both sides are a bit stronger than when they last met. How do you reckon this one's going to play out on Saturday?
I mean, let's be honest, they're going to have 70, 80% of the ball, and it's going to be down to us maintaining positional discipline, get a little bit of luck in that at any given moment, that group of players can produce a moment of quality that will outfox any defence, no matter how well drilled we are and how prepared we are for any sort of eventuality. They're good enough to be able to overcome that. And I think we've just got to be realistic in that if we get a chance, we have to take it. Because you ain't going to get many against that team. I mean, as good as they are going forwards, they're also surprisingly strong defensively, which, I mean, let's be honest, most of that is because they have the ball most of the time. So if you don't have the ball, you probably can't score more often than not. But, I mean, they've still got good defensive players. I mean, they've got one of the best goalkeepers in the world. I mean, I was absolutely staggered looking at their team sheet on Saturday lunchtime that Ruben Diaz couldn't even get in the starting 11 for what is ostensibly their biggest league game of the season. And it was annoying from my fantasy league perspective as well. when you're able to leave out a £60 million and a half, then yeah, you know that you've got good players in all positions. And from our perspective, it's, as Glenn said, low expectation. If we get anything out of it, it's a bonus. But yeah, basically the thing has got to be, just don't get battered.
Which we've said before. Dan, should we be nervous? Is there any chance we can get anything out of this? Or is it just hope for the best?
I mean, I can't remember what my prediction was from the game at the Etihad, but I probably said 4-0 or 5-0. So yeah, I mean, there's absolutely a chance they can get something out of it. But I just can't see it. City are on one of their roles, aren't they? And they are just an absolute powerhouse. Quality all over the pitch, I think. The best Southampton could do is try and scrape a draw or just not be humiliated, which I don't think they will be humiliated, to be honest. I kind of think that is, the Liverpool game aside, I kind of think that's past them now, where they just, you know, mentally collapse and just, you know, concede 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I don't think that will happen. But yeah, it'd be one of them games when Man City will need to be at 70% and Southampton will need to be at 100% if they're going to get a result. That's how good Man City are. I thought this year would be an actual title race between three teams. I thought all season it would be Chelsea, Liverpool, Man City, and it was going to be going down to the wire, but they've seemingly got the league wrapped up already, and it's not even the end of January yet. So, and they didn't even go and sign a striker. So it's, yeah, they're just a joy to watch, aren't they? And the thing I like about City is that through all this kind of COVID and throwing the towel, like some teams you think, you know, gaming the system or anything, I know they've got an incredible squad of players, but to be fair, they are just getting on with it. You know, they sent a team down to the FA Cup. They're just getting on with it. And I quite admire that. Pep's just going about his business quietly. And of course, you do have to add in there that, you know, they can leave one of the league's best defenders on the bench. It is quite a nice position to be in when you're playing your, as Steve said, you know, arguably your biggest game. But yeah, it's I'm looking forward to it because they're always good to watch. The only thing I worry about for Southampton is that they've been on a really good run, but now there's a good chance they may not pick up some Premier League points for a while. And you kind of, that's the only, like, the thing that after the Wolves game that I came away thinking, oh, that's just a shame they didn't get a point now, because it's unlikely, you know, that they could go their next three league games without any points. And then you're thinking, well, that's four games without any points now. And it just kind of changes the narrative a little bit. But that's me probably thinking kind of too far ahead. But that not concerns me a little bit. But yeah, it would be easy to change the narrative if they, you know, they lose to City, Tottenham and United. The kind of good momentum they'd built up from kind of West Ham, Tottenham and then Brentford kind of goes away, doesn't it? Doesn't really count for too much if they then don't pick up any points.
It's kind of thinking about what's relative though, isn't it? I mean, Spurs and United are three games that ordinarily you wouldn't expect us to get anything from, especially those last two away from home. At home against Spurs or United, I mean, we obviously drew both games this season. United, we should have won. Spurs, we may well have won if we kept 11 men on the pitch. So yeah, I think it's all relative that, yeah, we may end up going four defeats on the trot, but the work that we've done in the last month has put us in the position where actually that's not that big a deal, and we can reset and go again.
Absolutely, agreed.
Just in terms of the calendar, it could potentially be 6 weeks because we've got that strange international break coming up. Then we've got the FA Cup weekend. So actually, you know, we might be well into February before we end up getting any more points on the board. So,
yeah, I mean, I'm already dreading the Man United game because I just know what it'll be all week. It would be Ralph, you know, be master type thing. At the moment,
we've got the Spurs game midweek, haven't we? So it'll only be a 3-day build.
I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if they're asking about it before Spurs. saying after Thursday's press conference, last season it was, will Danny Ings stay? Is he going to sign the contract? That has very quickly now turned into, are you going to sign Brozier? This time last year it was, is Ings going to sign? This time it's, will Brozier stay?
Go on, Glenn.
Yeah, I just think Manchester City is a totally different ball game to playing Spurs or Man United, especially Man United at the moment. Hmm. You know, they've been sort of like massively poor in the games that I've seen. They've kept the results up for the same reason that they kept the results up when Ollie was in charge, in that they've got fantastic individual players, but they don't look to know what they're doing. So if we were previewing Spurs or Man United today, I'd be sort of like much more optimistic about getting something out of the game. So I don't see those two games as sort of free hits at all. Manchester City are a different level altogether, and they're a different level even to Liverpool and Chelsea at the moment, as is borne out by the league table. So I'd be disappointed if we got beat by both Tottenham and Man United, to be honest, given the current state of those two teams.
Let's do some score predictions for Saturday then. Dan, you're right, I don't remember what your prediction was for the game at the Emirates, but do you want to go first for this weekend?
The Etihad prediction for the Emirates was wrong as well. My prediction for the Emirates would have definitely been wrong.
They all merge into one, don't they?
Let's go 3-1 Man City, I think.
All right. Steve?
I think probably comfortable. I suspect we'll probably struggle to lay too much of a glove on them attacking-wise, so 2-0.
And Glenn?
I've got 2-0 Man City written down as well, so I'll go with that.
Stick with that. We mentioned Brozier as well, and Dan, you said about the press conferences. I just wanted to get your thoughts on that, the three of you, really. I think the quote this week was, we will find the right conversation with the player, the agent, the club, and what they want. What's the latest on this, Dan? Because I know that you've been in those press conferences and you've written about this at the week as well.
Yeah, I mean, that news story was just kind of born out of what Ralph said, and that was that Brozier's family, I think his words, were very, very keen for him to stay here. longer, and they have absolutely confirmed that. So that's where that news story came from. And then he also said that Martin Simmons has been in talks with his kind of counterparts at Chelsea over Brozier's future, that, you know, they were direct quotes from Ralph. I think I kind of sense that the Brozier thing will die down a little bit. No, I think it's Chelsea are in a position where he's got so long left on his contract. Southampton, on the other hand, you know, it's only January, and his form could realistically fall off a cliff from now until the end of the season. And then you wonder whether there would be the same clamour from supporters, kind of, that, you know, we need to sign him now. I think best thing for both parties is just to wait a little bit, see where it is. And once you get to April time, if he's still kind of proving to be a cut above what you already have, then absolutely, I think you go to Chelsea and say, look, what can we do now? I'd be surprised if there was another loan move. I don't know. I'm not sure on that. And then it's just a case of, if Chelsea want to sell, how much? Could they be clever about it again and put in a buyback clause or something like that? Because I just don't see, as good as he has been at Southampton, I don't see him getting into the Chelsea team. It's just not their way. They would rather go out and buy, you know, another £100 million striker, seemingly. And it's just like Tino, isn't it? Look, yeah, you can have him. I don't think they'd get him anywhere near as cheap as Tino, but you have him. If he turns out any good, we're buying back, and he'll come straight into our team and he's ready-made. You know, Chelsea managers don't have time to put their faith in young strikers. That's why they went out and bought Lukaku and didn't give Brozier a chance in the first place. So, yeah, I think it's a wait and see for now.
And do you agree with that, Glenn? Because a lot of people this week have obviously put two and two together. New owner coming in, watching his first game. He scores a hell of a goal. You know, the headlines kind of write themselves. But I think it might have been Ralph this week who said, actually, if you do sign a player like that, then you get the expectation that comes with a big fee. And that might not be right, because at the moment, the pressure's off to a certain extent.
I agree with what Dan just said there. But from our point of view as a club, with the length of contract he's got at Chelsea, his value is only going to go up if he keeps on scoring a few goals. You know, if he keeps on, like, if he scores, I don't know, another 6 or 7 goals between now and the end of the season, I'm just guessing the price now might be 25 million, it'll be 30 million at the end of the season. his value isn't going to go down over the next 3 or 4 transfer windows because of the length of contract he's got at Chelsea. Whether Chelsea would sell or not, Chelsea are a very strange club when it comes to contracts. I see they've just given a long term contract to Michy Batshuayi, who's never played and he's never going to play, but they just do it to sort of, I don't know why they do it, protect the value, I guess. So,
and they obviously, fair play stuff.
Yeah, they obviously don't see him as part of their future first team. Batshuayi, I'm talking about. Hmm. Do they see Brozier as that? I don't know. I mean, it can only be a positive thing that if that's true about his family wanting him to stay because he's playing and enjoying it, that can only be a positive thing, because they will obviously have an influence. But who would like to guess what Mr. Abramovich and his people have you know, got in mind for him? I really don't know. But I think Saints have got, you know, I think we've got to realize that if you want to buy a player to play as a striker in the Premier League, it's incredibly unlikely you're going to get away with spending 15 million. 15 million gets you a striker from the Championship, like we did with Che Adams, like we did with Adam Armstrong, and they're going to get 7-8 goals in a season. If Brozier can prove his worth and get 15 in a season, you're not going to get him for 15 million. You know, you're going to have to pay more than that to get a player. And maybe now with the new owner, maybe we're capable of doing that. But I don't think you can skimp at the top end of the pitch and you know, get a player who's going to score a bundle of goals for you.
We've got plenty of experience with that, haven't we? Do we just enjoy it while it lasts at the moment, Steve, and see what happens, see how it plays out?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think the noises coming from his family and stuff, and him sort of being very happy and here and supposedly wanting to stay. I mean, it all sounds a little bit Toby Alderweireld for me.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I mean, it's one of those, don't get too excited, because you know that there's strong possibility that come the summer, someone comes in and completely stiffs us. So yeah, I mean, enjoy him while he's here, while he's our player, then great. But we have basically once that ends in the end of May, beginning of June, then we've got very little control.
Yeah.
So one of those cross that bridge when we come to it. If there's a deal to be done and it makes sense for us, then great. If not, then obviously we've got to look to
find someone else.
Look at another option somewhere.
Yeah. A couple of other bits before we finish. I want to just go through a conversation that we sort of had on Twitter this week, which was Alistair, who's one of our patrons, was talking about the ploy of the team going down around 60 to 70 minutes to let the team take on some energy bars, have a chat with Ralph, that kind of stuff. Dan, do you just want to pick up on this? Because I know you wrote about this back in November, wasn't it, the piece, that the team they've got a bit more, I know we mentioned it earlier, streetwise, as it were.
Yeah, and it just made me chuckle when I saw that because...
Was it Danny Higginbottom?
I'd spoken to Danny Higginbottom the day before, and I told him about it.
He was quoting you on US telly, but without mentioning the source, I assume.
So Danny is one of the best pundits. In my opinion, he's one of the best pundits. He will do so much research before he covers a game. You know, I know he speaks to quite a few of our reporters before he's doing one of their games, and it was just one of the little things that came to my mind, and I thought that might be quite a nice detail for you to have. And they did it, and I sent him a picture of them on the pitch as he did it, and he was like, I mentioned that at halftime. Yeah, it's just about last season, and it's the same as Salisu. Ralph said it about Salisu. He's not actually said about the deliberate kind of go down, everyone goes and get a little energy sachet, but with the long throw-ins, he said the other week that it's not a tactical thing. He's not doing it because he thinks he's Rory Delap. He's doing it because what does it take? You know, how long does it take a centre back to travel 70 yards up the pitch to throw a ball? And what does everyone do when they're waiting for him? They're standing around getting energy again. So it's all kind of like little marginal things that he's doing, because last season, the club accepted that they can't last 90 minutes playing this way. They just can't do it. They fell off. They, by like 60, 70 minutes, they were knackered. So what they're doing now is they've just been a bit more clever about it. So they get Salisu to kind of walk over 70 yards to throw a ball in. You might score from it, you might not. But that gives everyone a minute and a half's rest. A player will go down 60 to 70 minutes. What does that do? Everyone walks over to the sideline, gets an energy sachet. As the injured player walks off, he's drinking his own little energy sachet. Then he comes back on. It's just little things like that that they're trying to do to, you know, keep them in games for 90 minutes. And yeah, I think it's quite clever.
Did we do it yesterday, Steve? Did you spot it yesterday? Because are we looking out for it now?
I didn't notice it. but there was a sort of middle period of that second half where everything kind of blurred into one. I mean, I completely missed the first substitution when Shea Adams came on for Diallo.
That was half time.
What was it?
Yeah.
paying that much attention. I mean, there was probably a 15-minute spell from, pretty much from start of the second half through till sort of, I think, when we made the second sub, where kind of everything just kind of seemed to blur into one. Nothing happened at either end of the pitch, and it was all just pass. It was like that little that clip from The Simpsons where they showed the Mexico against Portugal game on, like, in the World Cup on there, and they're literally just passing it between each other and not going anywhere. It kind of
that's
felt
a niche
a bit like
reference.
That. Oh yes.
The other thing I wanted to mention just before we finish, this won't concern you, Dan, about the Fantasy Premier League. You managed to get out of this at the start of the season, but now we're into the new year. I had a quick look today at the TSP patron FPR table, and we always talk about the football experts that we have on the panel. That's probably not borne out when you look at the league table at the moment. This is the league that's open to all the TSP patrons. There's a prize at the end of the season for the winner. Congratulations to Tom McCann, who's currently top with his, I think it's Manchester City, 1,383. 3 points. Chris Armsridge is second. James Gray is third. Just for the benefit of the three of us, I seem to be 10th at the moment. Glenn, 16th.
No, it's all right.
And then Steve, 23rd at the moment. You said you've had your struggles with the games being postponed, and it's difficult at the moment.
Yeah, I burned 4 points on Friday, I think, Friday morning, transferring in. I made two changes because I had Son and Corne, who were both out for the next month. Son's injured, Corne's at AFCON. So I basically used two transfers to get rid of both of them and bring in James Maddison and someone else. And then literally an hour after I'd made those transfers, the Leicester game gets called off.
So it's your fault.
It's like, oh, for goodness sake.
You're not doing as bad as producer Alex, by the way. He's propping up the table with 599 points. He's still got Torres and Benjamin Mendy in his team. So, it's not to...
Mean Machine 11?
Not taking it too seriously this year. But if you are involved, it is worth checking out. And congratulations to Tom, who's top at the moment, Chris in second place, and James, who's third. Before we go, quick shout out to our loyal and much-loved patrons. As always, the Matt Letizia tier patrons. We've got Colt Baker, Dave Ernsberger, Ed Bizzy and Phil Cook. A new Francis Benali tier member as well this week, Matt Hall. Welcome to Matt Hall. Thank you very much for your support. Also Nick Reed in our Franny Benali tier. And you can find out more about becoming a TSP patron and all the benefits that come with that over on the website. Thanks, Dan. Thanks, Steve. Thank you, Glenn. Have a good week, chaps.
Thank you.
Don't forget to follow the podcast wherever you're listening on the socials. It's at Total Saints Pod. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook, and you can always drop us a little email via the website as well. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Stay safe, and we'll see you next week.